This is Diana Courtney with Book Talk. My guest is poet and part-time Boulder resident Anne Waldman, author of more than 40 books. Her newest title is Trickster Feminism. Anne is the co-founder with Allen Ginsberg in 1974 of the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics at Naropa University. Welcome to our program.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Considering your 40 years or so of writing books, what's unique about this new one?
Well, I think I was responding to a call from the phenomenal world that we're in, which is just crazier day by day. You know, it's complete dystopia, dangerous time. One feels very ungrounded. One feels incredible empathy for the people who are suffering deeply with all these safety nets down. At the end of our poetry program this summer, we were in the streets here in Boulder on the mall protesting the cages and the deportation. I mean, it's just cruel, cruel, cruel. And thinking about our themes for our next program, I think we're going to work with Against Atrocity. It's really bad.
Tell us about this program you're describing.
Well, it's a program with workshops and panels and discussion and looking at political activism, looking at it from the point of view of poets and artists. So this book really reflects where my mind has been for the last 2 years. And I travel a lot, and I was the keynote speaker at the Jaipur Festival. And I was traveling to Mexico City, where people are asking me about the wall in Jaipur. Everybody wants to know, what do you think? You know, what's going on? And I realized I needed to have my work. I mean, my work is often political, and I work with documentary poetics, but I wanted my work to reflect this, my state of mind, if anything. So there's a lot of, you know, meditation on the issues and also the actual events. So some of these poems were penned in the streets. You know, I'd have a little notebook when I was circulating the Trump Tower, as we were doing often. I mean, I'm based in New York City, and I live in a place close to Washington Square Park. There were events every week, several events, and people marching from Harlem to Brooklyn Bridge. And, you know, there are these issues during, of course, the election and all that. The women's marches, of course, and up until the last one, which was this past January, where I helped with Penn organize a reading of poets in front of the New York Public Library.
And Penn is?
It's the Penn American Congress of Poets, who work all over the world. It's an international organization and very awake and aware of what's going on these days, and invite their artists to respond. I mean, they work in prisons. They have letter writing campaigns to save incarcerated poets all over the world. So it's a, you know, magnificent vision of how to be in the world as an artist. So that, you know, plays into it as well. And I have, you know, pieces where I'm literally walking around creating these mantras. Om Khan be gone, gone. Om man be gone, gone. And, you know, take the big guy down and the big guy out. But it's much deeper than that, in that, you know, there are pieces around everything for, you know, referencing the nuclear situation, referencing Jeff Sessions' obscene and insane obsession with bringing back the white Confederacy, which we definitely don't need. I mean, we haven't even taken care of the business of coming to real accountability for the racism and so on. So in a way, one can be very glad and excited that these things are all being so exposed. And I take issue throughout the book with patriarchy. That's the basic sort of, you know, when I'm addressing the idiocy and so on, I'm also having this larger view. And so I invoke the suffragettes, and I invoke all the women deities and mythological figures and historical figures to help me in my role as this trickster feminist. And the trickster is a complicated figure. I'm kind of reclaiming the trickster as a female possibility in playing and being also a con to meet the con of the patriarchy. So the trickster has to be fluid and a shapeshifter and so on, and sort of be ahead of the game and maybe a little lighthearted. I mean, I thought I want to write a light book, a book of great beauty to contrast with this horrible, degraded time we're in. And then I found myself just being, you know, continually outraged, continually amazed, bemused on the one hand, but also, you know, wanting to strike out. And so my opening poem has, you know, this image of driving a stake in the heart of the, you know, the problem, the abomination that we're in. And I'm trying to think of all the other rationales for the pieces in the book, but a lot of them were experiments and attention is what I call them. And they were able to keep me going rather than hiding under my covers, going into denial, turning off the news. I'm a terrible news junkie of, you know, not going out to the streets one more time. The idea was, okay, let's take it on. And I like to invoke this term apotropaic, which is actually averting evil. So it's the idea of incantation, spells, ritual practices. And I think of poems as being ritual practices. So they're there to avert this thing that's coming at you, which is our dark age. So it's a, you know, it was a tall order, and I agonized. I like to spend longer time on pieces, and I've been writing primarily in the last few years these long book-length single meditative poems that are all over the place, but and of course have within them spell and incantation and so on. But this seemed like guidebook or poetic protest. And also poetry is something when you can't talk about this anymore, how many more times can we say, what next? You know, this is we're at a loss because it's been so horrible for days. And poetry is a way to kind of be more playful or go to the other side or move around or travel or follow your, you know, your dreams, your surrealist imagery, etc. And rather than just trying to launch one more complaint.
You've been associated with Naropa since the beginning.
Right.
And you teach classes there in the summer.
Right.
As it was founded by Buddhists, as Naropa, a religious school.
We are a completely secular, non-church school. Our roots are in Buddhist practice and meditation, but that's, you know, we call it Buddhist inspired, in that we wanted to develop a non-competitive educational situation and experience for students. And so at least I can speak for Poetics, where we pay very close attention to the individual talent. You know, people, I never want the poet students to be competing. And we also have fiction students and students writing in hybrid genres and students involved with more performative strategies. But we've, I think, been separate since the 80s, which is when we became accredited. So we're our own institution, which I think is the way it should be.
You've said we have a motto at Naropa: keep the world safe for poetry. It's humorous, but has some real bite to it. If the world is safe for poetry, it can be safe for many other things. Why is that?
Well, you know, it's such a fragile beast, poetry, and very low on the totem pole of most, you know, consciousness. Or when we wake up in the day, you know, we're not saying, where's that poem? Or send me a poem. Or, I mean, actually, you know, I always joke about how nobody begs you to be a poet. You know, your world is not on its knees. Oh, man, you must be a poet. You just have to do that. It's the only thing you can do that you're capable of. And although my mother was a little bit on that end, she actually was very supportive with my creativity. So I'm grateful for that. But again, it's not a career choice. I mean, you can become a teacher, of course, and teach in wonderful institutions and support yourself that way. Very little money comes in for actual publication. And you can also give readings and so on, but that's not a real way to make a living. So you're doing it out of some kind of compulsion. I've often felt it's actually choiceless. So it was ironic to say, keep the world safe for poetry, a little bit of a joke. And I actually have a sign where I take it out in the street frequently when I don't know what else to say. You know, things have gotten so out of hand. Keep the world safe for poetry. It does raise a few eyebrows and people ask a few questions. But it's as if, and poetry has been around since the beginning of communication, since the beginning of our human consciousness. And some say the poetry comes from the language of the birds and listening to animal sounds and paying attention to our dreams and all these things that we carry in us that are ancient ways of being and practices and so on that we sometimes forget about. So keep it safe for the dreams. Keep it safe for the observation of just daily life.
Well, thank you. My guest is Anne Waldman, author of Trickster Feminism, published by Penguin Books. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.
Thank you so much. A pleasure talking with you.
You're welcome.